Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis, where the latest post covering finance and property news. It's a Monday again, and Edwin is back. And, well, Edwin, bit of a delay tonight, but I blame the weather.
Oh, look, I blame Elon and everybody else. I'm back on Telstra now, and we've still got a delay. It's all this whole infrastructure. It's the e-Karen and the e-commission and everybody else to blame, except my internet connection.
Well, I reckon the truth is that people don't want the story to be out there, right? Because there is actually some significant news for people who actually want it. I actually made a show the other day called Property Fool Us Again, right? Because I actually feel a bit like that at the moment with regard to what's going on. What with the home buyers fleeing auction markets, despite the sellers are out in force, the fact that the clearance rates are down a little bit, the fact that we've got the high LVR lending now under the auspices of APRA for the first time, you know, all of those things. And yet the spookers are still out there claiming that everything is absolutely marvelous and, you know, boom, 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 boom. It is fascinating. By the way, you know, more lenders have fixed their home loan rates higher because of that and because of those debt to interest income caps that APRA has imposed. The banks are going to potentially ration some types of mortgages for some people, potentially. So, you know, there's a lot to talk about here, Edwin. But to my mind, you know, it really emphasizes what we've been saying, that there is a lot more going on below the surface around property than most of the reporting is about. Although actually, maybe some of the property reporters are finally picking up some of the stories that we've been kicking around for the last, what, 2 or 3 years?
100%, mate. We're way ahead of the curve in regards to how the property market is being shifting and changing, and also the sentiment around buying and selling, and the method of selling, and the way that the industry has evolved and has manipulated the the way that assist in inverted commas buyers to buy. So we're getting to the pointy end of actually exposing a lot of the stuff that's going on. And as you said, we've been ahead of the curve for over 12 months, 24 months with some of the reporting that's been done of late. We've been ahead of the curve with regards to the showroom renovations. We've been ahead of the curve with many topics, and also with the way that the market was going to evolve and is going to respond to the influx of the different groups, the different demographics that we're going to be influencing the markets. So yeah, look, it's one of those we told you so, and we've been telling you so for many, many months. So the low sentiment around the auction campaigns, we've spoken about that, why people are sick and tired of being duped. And the other reason also is because markets have reached a particular ceiling, and it's going to take a while, a little bit, to break through those new ceilings. So yeah, things are going to cool down in certain areas because the asking prices are way above what the market is bearing. But the agents need those listings in order to make incomes to keep the doors open, and we know what's around the corner for selling agents. We know that the AML's coming in, cyber security regulations are coming in and going to bite them very, very hard. The low sales numbers are very, you know, are telling now, and we're going to see a retraction of 30 to 40% of real estate offices across the board, and I mean across Australia, not just in Sydney. So I'm compiling a list of the different franchise groups, and trying to have an idea and gauge from my conversations with my colleagues on the ground to see which agencies are going to suffer the most. But there is a lot of pain ahead. So these are the stories that aren't told. Yes, we are told about the $6.5 million sale in Bankstown. We are told about the 20, 30% above reserve prices in certain parts of Sydney, but we're not told of where the markets have basically plateaued, and we're not told as to the shenanigans, the real shenanigans, although the Sydney Morning Herald brought out the latest story with regards to people relying on the reports provided by the selling agents, which you and I have been talking about for almost 2 years now.
Absolutely. Well, you made a video, Trust the Building Report, they said, and this has got more than 2.2 million views now. A remarkable story here. We'll play the tape and you can see for yourself just how remarkable this is. This is one of those bathroom renovations that we spoke about, Edwin. And the truth is that the problem with these renovations is they're just so superficial, and they might look okay, but as soon as you start picking away at it, it's an absolute mess, isn't it?
Well, this is right, and this is what people are paying premium. The purchase of this property paid $250,000 more than what the property was worth at the time. Move the clock forward over just over 12 months, and then we've got a we're in there assisting him with renovating the four and a half the three and a half bathrooms that he fell in love with when he bought the property, and now it's going to cost him close to $100,000 again. If not, depending on what we find underneath underneath the floors, underneath the wet areas, to see if the joists and the bearers are being affected, because only God knows how long that's been in that condition. But this is why you can't tell me, Martin, that a lot of agents and vendors don't know that they're not colluding. You can't tell me that. You can't convince me of that. But in order for myself and my team to be satisfied when we help and assist our clients, well, this is why we get our specific building inspectors. That's why I do my own inspections of all the properties that we purchase for our clients. Whether it's Dusty or Evan or whoever is purchasing on behalf of our clients, I will do the final inspection, because it would lead us to determine whether or not, or how much more we're going to try and negotiate down before we start calling on other specialists, and before our clients start spending more money. But these are the things, these are the perils, and these are the discussions or the conversations and the stories that don't get published, because, hey, they don't make the market go boom. They make the market go sideways, or bring a lot of discussion into the way that the real estate arena has been behaving for the last couple of decades. But it's all push, 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 and the government has to push. The government can't put these brakes on, because we need the property sector to increase in value in order to keep the economy rolling along. And this is why, unfortunately, folks, I say that there is no way you'll change the. There's no way that the government's going to taper down, or even if we get a new government, it's going to taper down or dial down the immigration numbers. You might hear on the news that we're going to get less students coming in, but it doesn't mean that they're going to open the doors for other visa classes to increase to come in, because at the end of the day, as I've been banging on for months now, and that is that we need new money, and we need new lambs to the slaughter in order to build the high-rise developments that the governments want to build, and that they want developers to build in order to keep up with all their promises.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is fascinating to see how the dynamics are actually changing a little bit, despite the fact that many of those journos from the property sector seem to be just telling the story about the occasional market success. It's fascinating when you look at it a bit more closely. Shane Wright did a really interesting article, Property Markets Cooler as Extra $51 Billion Paid Off of Mortgages. There are tentative signs that Sydney and Melbourne housing markets are starting to cool as sky-high prices push them out of reach of potential buyers, just as Australians make record amounts of extra payments to get ahead on their mortgages. And they're quoting figures from Cotality because prices went up again. Housing affordability is pretty much shot, and it's getting worse, actually, not better. And all those expectations of lots of rate cuts seem to be disappearing. And another article here from Matt Wade: a property ladder is getting harder to scale. A record gap has opened between the price of houses and units in Sydney, making the city's property ladder even harder to climb. I think it's quite interesting. They're claiming that the median price of a Sydney unit has risen by 18%, but outstripped by 67% over house prices over the past 10 years, which is pretty interesting. And I'm trying to square that with the observation that Sydney residential land values have jumped again, up another 4.7%. So, we know that there's a lot of pressure on the price of land. We also know that there's a lot of pressure on the cost of building, and the cost of building new properties continue to rise. And yet the ability for people to pay is getting significant, very, very significantly worse. And then, of course, with the inflation shock that we had this last week, and the expectation now is potentially that rates are likely to go higher rather than not. This is from the AFR. The calls now are probably one or two rate rises next year, and even prompted the question of whether the RBA was too quick to cut in the first place, which is something which I've held for some time, because the inflationary pressures were still there. I'd also make the point, Edwin, that a lot of the inflationary pressures were policy-led. So, of course, we got those electricity support measures from the Treasurer through the election to give the illusion that inflation was going down, but now those are rolling off, so inflation is going up again. And Jim Chalmers, spin Jim, as I call him these days, Spin Jim, was trying to spin the story that, these are just, a bit random, and the trajectory is fine. No, trajectory isn't fine on this. So all those things together, it is begging the question, how is this going to play out? I make the point also in Perth, the constructions in Perth are slowing. Why? Because the costs are racing ahead. And again, it's worth underscoring the cost of new construction is way higher and continuing to grow. And what that means is that you've got this incestuous pressure on people trying to work out what to do, trying to grab a property at all costs if they can. And it doesn't stop there, actually. This article here, Edwin, if you want to find somewhere to get buried, as current price has gone up too. So wherever you look, it's up, up, up and away for prices, but down, down, down for housing affordability.
Like I said, it's getting more and more expensive to get older. And now we know that it's getting more and more expensive to get older and actually die. So we got to live a lot longer in order to pay more taxes. And before we depart, and even then, can we afford to die is the $64,000 question. So where do they put us? Probably pick us up in one of the new bins or something. You've got the food waste bin, then you've got the recycle bin, and then you've got the normal waste. So we have one as a family member passed away bin, so the council can collect the fourth bin every now and again. So, I don't know, mate, because it's getting more and more expensive to live, right? Where is it all going to go? I had a discussion with one of my colleagues just before the weekend, and talking about his missus trying to buy over in the Upper North Shore area. And us, look, as much as I like to give our followers and our viewers the good news that things are going to collapse in 2026. As I've been saying, this thing isn't going to slow down. Not for another 3, 5, who knows, 7 years. Because I look at outside of all the points that you raise with the economy, with the inflation, with I look at numbers. I look at the migration numbers. I look at what our legals associates in the legal fraternity are talking about, what they're saying, what the government's telling them. And hence the reason why I can talk and speak with confidence about the new visa classes that are going to be revamped. I mean, we broke a number of those stories before the mainstream media picked it up last year and the year before that, when we were talking about the extension to the university degrees, the tertiary degrees, the extension on the visas, and which was a pathway to PR, and it's all to control the prices of property. Are we building? You only have to drive around Sydney and count the number of cranes that you can see. I mean, in comparison to the number of cranes that we saw in 2013, 14, 15, 16, 17, I mean, it's we may count one tenth of what we had back then. Lindsay David was, we were talking about the building crane back then when you could count 360, 400, 400, 500 cranes going up and bringing small towers up across Sydney. Where are they? Subdivisions, you talk about the value of land going up. Why? Because we go back to the engineering works and the parcels of land getting smaller, so they're building right to the boundaries. They're further away. There's no infrastructure, and when you want to, as a developer and as in land subdivisions, you want to bring in infrastructure. It's very, very costly. We're up to about 280 to 300,000 just to bring services in to do the subdivision, and that's before everything else that's required, before your reports for your planning authorities, for the for all the planning instruments, in depending on the LGA that you're in, mandated that are required. So all that, I mean, there's a lot of land around us. There are developers that are holding 60,000, 70,000, 85,000 blocks of gazetted to have 85,000 blocks of land. I mean, there's three major developers in the north, northwest, south, west, and west regions. But they're basically just sitting on them and drip feeding, one, because they can, because they bought the land decades and decades ago. Two, it's too costly, and the councils aren't keeping up with the infrastructure. Look, some of the land around Badgerys Creek, they still don't have the services running to them, so you can't do anything, and yet they're still selling. And a lot of developers that bought those parcels of land 7, 10 years ago, with a 5-year option. Now the options have lapsed, and now they're paying through the nose to basically re-option them up again. I mean, this is the insanity of where we are. Why? Because, as I've been saying, Martin, and the light bulb hit in early 2020, and so we're no longer in control, and we haven't been in control. There are other forces controlling. So we go back to the numbers. Our migration numbers aren't going to taper down, no matter what government you put in there. I mean, I'm even doubtful in whether or not Pauline herself is going to, if she gained any more power, whether she'd have the power or to do anything. Then you've got construction's pretty much, in comparison to other, a decade ago, it's pretty much come down to a screeching halt. Cost of renovations and subdivisions, or small lots to duplexes or triplexes, or even small villa complexes. I mean, there's certain parts of Sydney that are thriving, but the majority aren't. So there's not a lot of building, and you really got to do your numbers. So hence the reason why you've got people are sitting a lot of equity, and the pain is that they're sitting on a lot of equity, but they, as I say over and over again, is that you can't eat the bricks and you can't eat the mortar, but yet you're sitting on a lot of equity, but yet the banks won't let you draw down on that equity because your credit rating is shot. And this is the pain that people are going through. So we would like to think that the solution would be to put a stop to a lot of the mandated policies that they've been currently running, but they won't, because, as I say, we need new lambs to the slaughter, and we need new money coming in. So, and in the meantime, you've got the cryptonians jumping out of crypto, Bitcoin, and you've got in other asset classes that have just gone through the roof. I mean, gold's going up again, and people are saying, "Hold on a minute, I better buy now." So there's a transfer of wealth from one asset class to another, and your other option is property, Martin. So you either go further afield, but there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure. There's the different groups, and now what we're seeing more and more. over the last 12 months. What we've seen this year from our client base point of view, they're wanting to get in the market. A lot of the pressure has been from one of my favorite groups is that I call the Desperate Housewives. The family members that are putting pressure to buy and to get. The partners are thinking more seriously because the market isn't pulling back. That's where we are. So I don't think a lot is going to change other than markets around those that have reached the ceiling, that have reached the peak, a high peak. They're going to start coming up because you can't afford to buy a $6 million home in Bankstown anymore. So you're going to buy around Punchbowl. You're going to buy around Greenacre. You're going to buy around Chullora and all those areas in order to be close to Bankstown. So those markets are going to skyrocket. So those markets have got to pull up to 3.5 million at the moment. Some of those markets are at 2.5 to 3 million already. So this is that's just the my version of property osmosis. So as you get high prices achieved for certain sales, others will follow. Look at Kings Langley. Kings Langley in the last 3 months have had five homes sell over $2 million. Prior to that, the benchmark was around 1.7 to 1.8. And because of that, now you've got Kings Park, where 3 months ago you could buy for 950 to 1,050,000. Now you'd be lucky entry price point in Kings Park is 1.3, and that's not in the catchment area for the Kings Langley's primary school. So it's a mess. It's hard to decipher what's going on unless you've got your finger on the pulse, and the mainstream media will just pick and choose the stories. But there's a lot more going on that people aren't aware of, and they need to be made aware of, but they don't unless they follow our show and follow us on other social medias and watch your other videos as well, Martin.
Well, we do try to be ahead of the curve, and housing affordability is certainly shot. We also, of course, have this pressure of people to try and buy because the rental sector is bust as well. And it's interesting that in recent times, finally, the stories about the rental question seems to be back on the agenda a bit. And in fact, there was an article that I saw that picked up my analysis and talking specifically about Queensland and specifically talking about the issue with the rents there. This article here shows that there's a lot of people up in Queensland who can't cover the basic living costs, according to somebody called Digital Finance Analytics. talking about the rental stress, because this is the other part which I always come back to, that when you think about property purchase, the alternative is property renting. And we've got more people renting than previously, but rents are continuing to be a real problem for many people. I see it in my models. Other people are seeing it too. So crippling rents tipped to rise by up to 10,000 a year, according to this article. And they're talking part there about the Olympic Games and what that might do. Or indeed, this article here, let the rent battle begin. Tenants face 40,000 a year costs by 2035, with Melbourne renters face the prospect of paying almost $40,000 a year, close to $10,000 more than typical today. And Louis Christopher's been quoted there as saying that there are significant rent increases across the capitals in the next year or so. So all of those things are actually part of the story. And, when I talk to people in my one-to-ones who are in the rental sector, they're damned if they stay in the rental sector because rents are rising, and damned if they don't stay in the rental sector because property affordability is deteriorating despite all of the 5% tweaks and everything else. It's harder and harder for people to actually be able to borrow and afford to get those mortgage repayments going. The banks are sort of pushing on one hand to try and increase the ability to borrow more, but APRA is pushing back and saying, no, high debt-to-income ratios, not necessary. Remember that a lot of people, when they go into that first purchase, are 6, 7, 8, or 9 times income. So that's going to be a problem under the APRA guidance from February next year. So all of those things are really putting the you know, the acid on property. And I actually think that this is part of the difficulty, that there's no simple way out. But of course, then the truth is that authorities are saying, got to build up, must build up. The only way to solve the housing affordability problem is to build up, despite the fact that it takes a lot longer to build up relative to a low rise. It costs a lot more. And if you have to go down into the basements, that's a problem. And of course, you know, Hong Kong's recent disaster highlights the fact that, maybe it's not all, glory when you build up, because there are reports about the elderly not being able to get to the stairwells being engulfed with smoke, lifts out of commission. And of course, there's some renovation stuff going on there, but question about the cladding, all of those things. So high rise is not necessarily a great deal. And when I talk to people who've got into these new high rise, the other thing that comes in so often is, one, the strata fees continue to go up significantly higher. So that's an inflationary pressure that isn't actually captured in the CPI numbers for some weird reason. I don't understand why that is, because they just look at the advertised rents, not the strata fees, which are actually a big chunk and going up. And the other, of course, is that, locally, there is a lot of pressure to build up. And well, look at this one here, right? Parramatta, 71-story build to rent co-living tower. And what do you make of this, Ed, when you know Parramatta very well? It looks a little bit worrying. They have to build up, but they have to drill down as well, don't they, into the basements. And, you know what happens to the basements in and around Parramatta.
Well, there and a couple of things with that that shot that I sent you with of those towers in Hong Kong, where the poor bastards, all the elderly are the ones that suffer, and the infirm, the ones that suffer because of the, they're not quick enough to get to the access points, and then when the stairwells are engulfed with smoke, obviously, they die, they asphyxiate before they go from the smoke inhalation, they die before they actually get. Literally cooked, but it's a sad story. I mean, and just and also laying a further base on that is the new materials that they used in the towers, which was one of the discussions that Dusty was as she was going through the WeChat groups and all the WeChat chatterers in Hong Kong and what she was getting there. It's absolutely insane. So now we've got a proposal around Parramatta to build a 71-story, it's 240-metre high tower in Parramatta. And I sent you that screenshot of the of where the where 89 George Street is in comparison. We're a lot closer to the to Parramatta River, to the bank, than a lot of the other properties that I've shared on the show. I mean, further up the hill, further up Charles Street towards the New South Wales Police headquarters, where there was sinkholes and other issues with basement car parks, being engulfed with water, like I said, further up the hill, right? So this is a lot closer to the banks of Parramatta River. How deep are they gonna excavate? My understanding is that currently anything below three levels, there is going to have major issues closer to the river where 89 George Street is. I doubt it whether things are going to be dry past the second basement basement car park area. And you're going to have to bring in pumps up to the third basement. You can bring in electric pumps, and they'll be going full hog 24/7. And then you've got beyond that, the only pumps that will be suitable to pump any water out from 21 meters down is your diesel pumps, but you can't have diesel in the basement, right? So it's the craziness of where we are and what the government are pushing. Now, outside of the construction issues, the building issues, so it's going to be Opal Tower, Opal Mascot Tower 2.1. Then we've got new materials that they want to use. And this is, this is even scarier than a basement car park having water ingress and having issues. is the new materials that are going to be used in order to make it, so-called make it 40% quicker to build and a lot lighter to build as well, which is untested, not proven, and that hasn't gone through the test of time. Look, Maersk Constructions, we're building with steel frame like they do in America, and Hebel throughout the whole, for the floors, walls, for the majority of the structure. That was a lightweight construction. I thought that was very innovative. It was good, but didn't respond well. That type of construction didn't respond well with our climates because of the expansion and the contraction and the fixtures and the fittings. You're going to have issues with your fixtures and fittings and your wet areas, your waterproofing membranes, because there's a lot of movement in those buildings. Although it was a brilliant idea, brilliant concept, lightweight. They've tried it. I've been in the industry long enough to see the different materials that come in, and I'd hate to be the bastard, testing them, living in them, because you don't know the issues that are going to be faced moving down the track. I'd hate to be the builder building them, because there's going to be a lot of issues. Not only you as a builder, you may be smart, you may be clever, and I'm not saying that tradies aren't smart and clever, but you literally have to educate the workforce around you, all the trades around you, in order to building is that those types of buildings can be easy if you know what you're doing in terms of the I like to use the word, it follows a rhythm. Right, there's a pattern, there's a rhythm, there's a way to do things. But when you're using new materials, then you've got to train the electricians, then you've got to train the plumbers, then you've got to train everybody else. I mean, what would have taken a couple of years to build, it's going to now take 4 to 5 years, because there's going to be a lot of stuff ups along the way, and even then you don't know whether it was completed properly, because you can rest assured that if the government got anything to do with it, going to cost a shitload more, and we're not going to know how it was built, because a lot of it's going to be swept under the carpet.
Absolutely. And these new materials often sound good on day one, but when you go back and look at it, year 5, year 10, year 15, then maybe not so bright. And unfortunately, people are always looking to cut corners, particularly on construction, because the cost of construction, as we were saying earlier, are so high. And when you are actually trying to build up, massively high, you assume that the engineers have done their calculations appropriately in terms of weight bearing, but there's a whole nother level of complexity with materials that actually come to sort of finish the property. And I would remind everybody that maybe around half of high-rise constructed recently have leaks and water ingress, as well as the problem quite often is that they're actually quite noisy places to live. And I keep getting people talk to me about living in high rise and getting woken up in the middle of the night, when the lifts go, or people's noise from
Well,
next
there's
door.
so yeah. So there's a point that you just made, Martin. When they've got issues with the lifts currently, if you recall, a couple of months ago, we spoke about how long it's taking lift companies now to, with one of our viewers sent us that report, that it's going to take the unit that he owns in the complex up in the up in North Shore. It's going to take him 2 years to rectify or to service, to change over one of the lifts. It's two building complex. On either side of the each building, there's a lift well that goes to the basement. God help the poor bastard that or that lives in the third, fourth, fifth floor on either end of those buildings, because those buildings are also got a divided wall. So as you're changing the lift well, you're servicing the lift well and changing the lifts. I mean, 2 years from start to finish, from when the strata gets the green light to completion. That's and there's a caveat on that. If you remember from the post, there was a caveat That would be the minimum period that it would take. And they've got four lifts now. So when you've got these towers coming up, what do you do when you have to replace the lifts? As you said, 5 years, 10 years down the track, or if they use dodgy lifts, a few years down the track, whilst it's still under warranty, it doesn't mean, the builder might say, yeah, okay, I'll replace it, but hey, unfortunately, it's gonna take another 2 years before I can get the bloody thing into the country. So this is the problem that we're going to be facing moving forward. It's not only with the new construction, we're going to be chasing our tail, because a lot of the buildings that were built in the early 2000s, when we and more so when we really went high in 2012 onwards, to cater for the WeChat chatter wave of investors, and we went crazy with high rise. Those lifts are now come to the use by date. And that is the danger. That is the issue the complexities of construction, when you move forward 5 years, 6 years, 10 years down the track, especially when you don't have the world branded lifts, or even the world branded lifts now, most of the components come from China anyway. And look at China. China's economy is absolutely shot. Manufacturing is absolutely shot. So in comparison to the, do you think that if our let's say we need spare parts for all sorts of machinery, equipment, from transport to industrial machines to warehousing, and also with the construction industry, do you think that we're not a big player? So they're going to send most of the equipment, most of the requirements, most of the need, first and foremost, to the bigger countries, where they're obviously placing orders by the thousands when we're placing orders by the tens. So yeah, we're not, we think we're big. We think we're big because geographically we may be big, but as a body, as a group of people, as an economy, we're really not that big. And this is where people make the big mistake of, thinking that our markets, our property markets, are big. You may be wealthy in a lot of in comparison to other parts of the world, but in terms of numbers, we're not a very big market, and therefore we're going to have all these other issues facing us. Moving forward with construction, which is going to be very, very costly for those that are going to be confronted with it.
Absolutely. Well, the costs of construction, I think, will continue to be a story. We're not going to see those prices coming down. Inflation is still raging, and the cost of labor, of course, the other factor which is there too. All of that translates to higher initial construction costs. But because they're cutting corners, and because they're looking to always build down to a price, the chances are we've got a legacy of properties being built now, which will have higher maintenance costs into the future. Those higher maintenance costs will be translated into higher strata fees and probably unexpected increases to strata fees. So if you are a prospective purchaser of a high-rise unit at the moment, ask some really hard questions about the trajectory or the expected trajectory of those strata fees. The story I'm getting again and again is that those property purchasers from a few years ago, particularly property investors, but not only property investors, are finding that the strata fees are not just going up a few percent. In some cases, they're doubling or tripling. And the trajectory over the next few years is for continued rises in fees. And I was talking to somebody the other day through my one-to-one conversation that was making the point that whilst when they initially took the property, and they're actually a tenant, so they're actually paying their rent, they were making the point that the rents increases were justified by the strata fee increases more than the cost of living increases, or more than just standard markets. In other words, they were being forced higher by higher strata fees. I think that's a really important point in all of this. So you know, again, we've always said be careful about high rise. I would say be even more careful now. And as we go on to the conversation, the other angle, I want to cycle back round to this issue of building surveys and all of those things, because it's interesting, Edwin, we're starting to see a bit of a spate of articles on the deception related to those surveys. Finally, well, they should have watched our show, right? And this one here from Nigel, a shocking truth about home inspections costing buyers millions. And this particular one starts with hearing scratching and listening to noises in the wall and discovered that, oh, guess what? termites. And the point was there, well, maybe if they'd had a better survey, they would have picked it up. But you you responded to that by saying, hang on a moment. Yeah, you've got the receipts. You know that this is, we've been talking about this for a long, long time, but finally, other people are talking about it too now.
Yeah, and but the angle that they forgot to, that they really didn't raise in that article that Nigel didn't raise or really drill down into, is that why did this happen? You and I have been talking about it for, you know, over 3 years, when we started flagging it, and then we started advising and giving tips to our followers and our viewers not to trust the building report that's handed over by the agent, because it's not worth the paper that it's written in. I do have the receipts. I've got multiple building reports on a property, and in many cases it's the same building inspection company that provides the reports. Okay, it's two different building inspectors, but it's the same company that provides the vastly different on the same property. But again, as I said, Martin, you and I have been talking about this for 3 years. I've been posting that. I've been very loud. I've been questioning the industry as to why this is allowed. Even going back as far as when the previous government, state government, and trying to get. I was trying to get some headway with the Minister for Fair Trading at the time and Innovation and Fair Trading and Innovation, Dominello, but they didn't want to hear it, because it was a way to help the purchaser. But as I keep on saying, these things were only hindering the purchasing because the reports are very, very lightweight. Now that I'm back on LinkedIn, I'm creating some waves on LinkedIn. It's not necessarily so much creating waves, but it's really bringing to light what needs to be brought to light, and say that again, policies that the government threw at the industry to try to be seen to curb underquoting and that expenditure that people were facing by getting building reports before auctions. Was being costly, but it's actually costing the public a hell of a lot more when you compare $650 to $200,000-$300,000 renovation of a property that's being infested by termites.
Yeah, and I will make the point that if you actually rely on that survey report that's provided by the vendor as part of the sale process, you have very limited recourse subsequent, right? Because the survey isn't really for you. The survey was for the vendor. And, it really is no more than a marketing document. Now, if you actually get your own separate structural survey done by a recognized and licensed surveyor, you actually then do have recourse if, in fact, subsequent something was revealed that wasn't revealed at the time that should have been revealed. So you've got much more security and insurance if you actually get your own. The other point to make, though, here is that when you actually look at the issues that are often highlighted in these vendor-driven surveys, it's all standard templated stuff. So these people go around quickly and basically have a little app that says, yeah, we'll tap that one and that one and that one. So you have standard wording, standard wording, standard wording, right? There's almost no customization to the particular property. Might add a couple of photographs, etc., but really it is very much boilerplate. And you've got to ask the question about the value of those vendor-driven surveys relative to the truth that when you actually get into the property and you discover the reality, and quite often there's a huge gap. So, you know, we can only say it one more time. Make sure that you don't rely just on what that marketing document says about the property. Make sure that you do your own due diligence and get your own separate survey, because it can cost you a hell of a lot later.
And you find that when, yeah, the industry, that industry was deregulated in, 89. So since then, any Jack and Jill or man and his dog could basically do us a course. One is done in Queensland and one here in New South Wales, for 2 weeks, and then obtain a building inspection license. And then you just have to link yourself up with any provider of the app, and away you go. No disrespect to the IT fraternity, but a lot of people that have just given up on the IT world because AI has taken over. And I'm just saying beforehand, before even AI started taking over, those that just gave up and wanted to more of a different experience, going to a different world. It suited them fine, because, as you said, it was just really tick a box, click a link, insert, cut and paste the particular code, and then there's a big caveats on every page. It's just a visual inspection, I mean, They won't even move a chair out of the way to see if there's any moisture coming through, if the chair's behind the wall of a bathroom, the shower recess area of the adjoining room, or anything. I think it's above 5 kilos that they won't move. And if the manhole is not, they deem to be not fit to go in and inspect the subfloor area, they won't. And they're the caveats. And as you said, finally, is the fact that, hey, they're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. So they're not going to spend the adequate time in order to do a proper inspection. We've had a show where I shared that recording I did of the agent, when I asked him the question, would you rely on the building and pest report that you're handing out for this property? And he said, no effing way. That's the nature of it, right? So real estate agents themselves that are handing them out won't buy property relying on those building reports. Then why should you as a purchaser?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that's no more we need to say on that, other than get your own survey. You know, it's worth it, whether it's a unit, whether it's a house, whether it's new, whether it's old. You are on much firmer ground. And like I said, you have recourse if, in fact, something jumps out later that wasn't actually highlighted by the surveyor. Now, there are caveats, of course, with even those. So, and there, if you look at the weasel words, quite often they will try and ring fence those issues and say, well, we can only see what we can see, and we haven't done this, haven't done that, whatever. But nevertheless, you're on much firmer ground than with these vendor reports that are, as you say, just templated. Let's look at the numbers. In Sydney, on the 24th, 23,706 property listed. That's by the domain definition of the Sydney region. And going through to the week later, 22,489. So a bit of a fall. And consistently, actually, pretty much across all of the categories, land is still there, of course. And when you look at the data trends in your map that pulls out the land as a separate category, you can see that we are drifting down a little lower, as you'd expect now as we come into the start of summer and the summer season.
Yeah, look, I think it's a big dive. It's a big nosedive in numbers from last week to this week, over 1,000 listings have been retracted from the domain region, Sydney region, and yeah, the numbers for when you take away the land envelopes start to look even a little bit lower than the previous year. So I think there's going to be a lot more retraction because we're people, especially people that aren't getting the high prices that they've been promised. Don't forget, the industry is promising big on sales. They're promising big numbers, and they're not coming. And here's the reason why: the clearance rates have been lower, according to the main portals as well. The sentiment's low, and we're hearing reports of that. Our observations on the ground: there's no spring in the step. The auctions are really flat, and it's one of the main reasons, from our observations, is the fact that they're trying to crack that ceiling, and it's going to be very, very difficult. So that produces very low sentiment, and this is, in my opinion, why the numbers are coming down quicker than previous years.
Absolutely. And I think we're going to see more of it ahead, certainly. There are still lots of lemons out there. I've had a couple of conversations this last week with people who were chasing properties and then got the surveys and realized that there were major catches and the prices were way over what they should have been. They negotiated, but the vendor wasn't prepared to move. So there's still this gap between expectations set by agents and reality. And I think we're going to see more of that. Let's look at the Melbourne numbers. In Melbourne on the 24th, 30,145. A week later, 29,341. So a slight easing down. And it's a bit of a similar story with a bit of a slowing. Although actually in Melbourne, Edwin, I'm seeing a lot more lemons than in Sydney at the moment, and a lot more property investors still desperate to get shot of those investment properties. Hopefully at exalted prices before prices begin to sort of settle for the summer or maybe even go down. And I would say that anybody who's thinking as an investment, thinking about Melbourne, I would be very careful, particularly in the high-rise sector.
Look, there's I take my chance. I take my chances more with an apartment in Melbourne than a freestanding house. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm going to go and invest in Melbourne, but it's just one of those things. There's going to be a lot more pain, in my opinion, again from my observations. And this isn't financial advice. Just to just my catchphrase is get out of Melbourne, because we ain't seeing nothing yet in comparison to the investors that are pulling out. The only thing that'll save the Melbourne market, Martin, is if we speed up the mutual recognition with policies in that tertiary mutual recognition with India. And I mean, I know it's been talked about and that's been put in place. I know we can, but the legal fraternity is pushing damn hard. Move that, and you've got 1.4 billion people that I'm not saying they're all going to move to Melbourne, but the focus will be in Melbourne, because when you compare it to the Sydney prices. So now I have seen a lot across social media, Facebook. Not so much on Twitter, but or X, but on LinkedIn, and TikTok, and Instagram. I mean, there is so much spruiking going on about buying Melbourne. This is it. You buy the bottom. Like as I said, in the markets that they're putting the clients into, are those markets that are very that the let's say the investors, our WeChat chatter investors, are just wanting to get out because of the social issues around those areas, which is, it's sad, really, really sad, considering, and it's pushing further and further inward towards the CBD. So that is why the Melbourne market is still going to be in a lot of pain, in my opinion, next year from our observations. I mean, you've got to be extra careful what you're paying for property there. Especially because the last thing you want to do is overpay for something that's going to continue to drop in value, and then on top of that, you find out that it's riddled with major defects that the building report that you got from the selling agent didn't disclose because, hey, caveat emptor, and it's only a visual observation.
Absolutely. I think it's worth just reflecting twice if you're thinking of buying in the Melbourne market at the moment. Let's look in Brisbane. 3331, 3331 on the 24th in the Brisbane region. 3195 a week later. So even there, we're seeing a little bit of an easing back, as you'd perhaps expect. And looking at the auctions, I think your clearance comment was very important. Whilst the numbers were a little bit, high, and we've got a few reasons why that is the case, of course. But looking at the clearance and looking at the comparisons, it's still relatively weak. And I think this is something that people need to understand. The truth is, the auction scene is not what it once was.
No, and this is why in 2026 it's going to be very a trying time for auctioneers and the auction method of selling. Because I believe that a lot of people are being educated and are across this the shenanigans that go on. So in my opinion, it's not a bad thing. It's an oversale of a strategy that doesn't necessarily achieve the best price for the vendor, nor the best outcome for the buyer either. So both parties lose, and the only one that walks away with a smile, the only ones that walk away with a smile is the selling agent because they get the commission regardless of what it sells for, and the auctioneer because now they're clearing, on average $1,000 for the half hour. Spit and shouting match that they have on the ground.
Well, somebody has to make some money somewhere. When let's look at the rentals. So here in Sydney, 11,957 on the 24th, 12,538 a week later. So a bit of a rise. In Melbourne, 12,276 on the 24th, and 12,042 on the first. So again, just a slight to easing back, as you'd expect, perhaps at this time of year. Again, what I do find is that the rents are still continuing to be a problem and still rising, and will continue to rise, I think. And Edwin, as we come to the end of the show, you've just got time to tell a little bit of a story with regards to, well, an important little tip, perhaps.
Yeah, look, the tip is if you want to get things done around your house, you better start thinking about doing them sooner than later. Especially in early 2026, and particularly if you live in Victoria, Melbourne, Victoria. Look, if I think your birthplace, Martin, is certainly leading the ground, but I think we're the Victorians are following suit, and that is with all the regulations and the complications. But look, you only have to reflect and look back at the changes to the rental laws, to the rental regulations, and the Act there in Melbourne. What it really meant, what it's going to engulf, and if you're part of the world is the call it the litmus test or is the benchmark? Well, there's a tweet that I couldn't help myself but save for the rant and try and share it out, and that is that this poor bastard in the UK for a $5,000 window replacement job is now paying sorry, £5,000. Is paying an extra £10,800 more for the job, and that 10,800's got to do more with compliance than it does with the actual cost to do the job. And this is where we're again moving into with a lot of the older properties. I'd say across the board. On one hand, I say, look, it's not a bad thing to force landlords and to force people to maintain properties, especially if you don't want them to fall down on top of tenants or even yourself for that matter. There's some good in that. But when you go to these extremes, and the extremes that we've already seen in Melbourne. And when you start seeing what we're now seeing and reading about in the UK, well, is it really just a money grab in order for, is another form of taxing the public? All these compliances, look at the cost of construction, look at the extra compliances that you have to, all the extra reports over the last 12 months. They've added an extra $30,000-$40,000 in just reports per unit before you start to build, which adds a lot. But what do you get for it? Now they're going to the residential homes or established homes that have been owned by people for decades. And then it raises another question, Martin, which is even scarier for me, and that is, look at the people that have owned these homes, in, let's say, if a lot of these regulations and mandates and policies come into play here in Australia. And I've only got to look at the older generation. As I said, they may be asset rich, but they're cash poor, and they're barely putting food on the table. What are they going to do when they're forced to change? They're going to be forced to sell. But where do you place them? Where do you put them when there's nothing being built? And now you've got to basically remove them from the neighborhood that they spent 70 years, 75, 80 years of their life, and you're going to uproot them and send them 40, 50 kilometers west and put them in the middle of nowhere. And I mean, it's crazy. The world's just gone mad. It's just gone mad when you start looking at all the other things that are happening around the property market globally and also now locally. If we're going to be emulating all this stuff that's going on, as I said, in your part of the world, which looks like we are currently on that trend, well, get your shit done earlier than later, because it's only going to get costlier and costlier as the months roll by.
Yeah, absolutely right. And there are some significant impacts coming in the UK market. I'll just mention briefly. They had a budget this last week, and they've announced now effectively a mansion tax. So properties valued at more than £2 million will have to pay effectively more rates. And as the value goes up, you're going to have to pay more and more. Now, interestingly, in Southeast England, a lot of properties in and around London are well over £2 million. And quite a lot of those properties are actually being lived in by relatively elderly people with limited means. And so the interesting debate now is, with the mansion tax effectively coming in, will they be so asset rich and cash poor that they won't actually be able to pay those additional charges? And will they be forced to sell? And I think that's an interesting little harbinger of what we may see ahead. As well as the maintenance costs, which, as you say, are rising. If we get more intervention from governments effectively trying to sort of mess with the market, we could actually have a lot of unintended consequences, just as we've had in Australia in the last couple of years. And I think unintended consequences for me in the property market is the thing to watch out for, particularly as we go into 2026. And that's a conversation perhaps we'll pick up in a future show, Edwin.
Yeah, it's interesting. But look, thanks again, Martin, and thanks for doing the show earlier today. Now I can go and celebrate my birthday.
Congratulations, 21 again, Edwin. Wonderful. Have a good
Yeah,
evening. Take care.
40, 40. You
Okay,
take care.
40. Take care. Bye-bye.